podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Tony Review system, Diogo. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock. It's the Fight In. It's the Fight In. Clock.
Come on, Chutney.
Hello, welcome back to the Fighting Cop Podcast, Season 12, Episode 1. Boys, Season 12. Who'd have thunk it? We're back for another. How long can this continue, Alex?
Probably one more year, and then
got one more. So we're the Perisic. We're the Perisic of the.
I'm sick of it now. I don't know about you, but this is.
Yeah. I know you did text. You did text about four or five times today, going, I am on tonight, aren't I? I am on. You do want me, don't you?
Well, it's because I'm working from home, so it's a rare. It's a rare day. You've got me. I've already been on two podcasts today.
Brilliant. Good for you. John, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right, mate. Just listening to that, it just reminds me of in Sopranos, where Tony Soprano is talking about the golden era of being a gangster and how he felt like he missed all the best bits and came in at the end. That's basically like me and my involvement in the Fighting Cock. It's like indeed, all the best bits gone before and I've come in at the end and now it's going to be over.
How long have you been involved in the Fighting Cock?
Don't know, 3 years?
Has it been that long?
Yeah. It's felt like a lifetime, I know.
Feels much longer. Yeah. Anyway, lots coming up in this episode. Predictions for the season, rating the transfer window. We're answering your questions, of course, and talking about the Rangers game as well. Before we do, we've got some exciting news, boys. The Fighting Cock has a sponsor. After 12 years, we've got a sponsor.
Hello?
We had another sponsor last year, but we've got another one. We've got a new one. Brilliant one. We've got NordVPN. Boys, you know what NordVPN is?
I do now.
Do you know, you know what a VPN is? Essentially, it's like a private network for your internet connection. It gives you security. It hides your internet activity, which is really important for you, Alex. And you can browse the internet without constraints. Apparently, NordVPN offers military-grade security. It's like MI5 shit.
Damn.
John, you know when you put on a bit of Stone Island clobber?
Big time.
It makes you double hard.
Yeah, correct.
That's essentially...
You can punch bullets. You can punch bullets with it.
You can punch the sun away when it gets too hot.
Exactly.
Your own words.
That's why I was head to toe in my Stone Island jacket in 30 degrees weather, because obviously I could just punch the sun away and then I'm cool. I'm staying cool all day in that.
NordVPN is essentially Stone Island for your PC.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you know what else? You know, this isn't a situation for you guys, but for me, I've got kids and my missus is very sensible. No, she's responsible because she put on parental lock, which means you can't access any of the bad stuff on the internet. And you don't want your kids to access the bad stuff, but I want to see the bad stuff. I want to be knee deep in the bad stuff. And NordVPN allows you to circumnavigate parental controls without your wife or the kids knowing. So there's that. There's also, you know, what's the most frustrating thing about being a football fan or a Spurs fan when you want to watch football at 3 p.m. on a Saturday?
It's just not on TV, Flav.
You can't.
Available.
You can't, can you? You can't. Well, according to NordVPN, and I've actually done this myself, you can access 3PM games from other networks that are broadcasting in other countries with NordVPN. So never need you miss a NordVPN, a game ever again. And certainly don't have to bugger about with streams in dodgy sort of, you know, they're breaking up and there's commentary from countries that you don't understand. That's fine as well. I mean, I've got no issue with foreign commentary. I'm not, you know, there's no issue there. But if you want to access stuff that's coming from, you know, America, then you can do that with NordVPN. Finally, one of the most interesting things I found, and there's millions of features to NordVPN as well, is that the cost of buying, say, YouTube Premium in the UK is about $11.99. You can use NordVPN to access servers in Argentina where it's just 85p. So it saves you £11 a month by using NordVPN. And NordVPN essentially is the cost of a coffee each month. So not only are you getting access to all of the good stuff that we just mentioned, but you're also saving yourself, well, £11 a month. So you're actually making money by signing up. And if you want to sign up, you can get an exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/thefightingcock. You get a discount on the subscription and you get an additional 1 month for free. It's completely risk-free because NordVPN offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's really easy to use. Literally, you download the app, one click, and you're in.
And you get it across 6 devices as well. I've done it. I did it about an hour and a half ago. Yeah. And I have I have got cum on my calf right now.
You've got cum on your calf. What were you so excited by the sign up offer?
Well, I just wanted to see if there was different porn in Argentina.
Was there?
It turns out yeah.
Well, there you go. You can access anything. There's no geo-locked stuff with NordVPN. Sign up now, cost of a coffee. nordvpn.com/thefightingcock. Right, boys, let's get into the Rangers game. It was another preseason game that wasn't friendly at all. It wasn't a warm-up. The game wasn't pedestrian in any way. It was properly competitive. What was your takeaway from it, John Boy?
I think this has been, like, we've seen this across the friendlies that we've had, or like the preseason games, is that I think this can't be by accident. I feel like this might be by design. And like we know that Conte likes to push the players physically, emotionally, and a lot of what his kind of mantra is really is about wanting to see what players' limits are and how far they're prepared to go. And so I think like the games that have been selected and the opponents that we've got, they were always going to be this type of game because they're that type of opponent. And I think throwing that into the mix is not a bad thing because people talk a lot about like winning mentality and like, you know, needing to win anything, any kind of cup just to like build this type of mentality. You can also build it in these environments, right? Every game can be important and every game can mean something. Obviously, when you're playing a team who you're very aware that they're not competing, that has an effect on you. So I think these games have been probably pretty beneficial to us, the fact that they have been competitive like this and given us an edge. And also like playing against Rangers at Rangers is never fun for any team. And that, like, the fact that this is a preseason game, it's kind of irrelevant. Like, they were always going to be well up for this game. And so I think we probably gained quite a lot out of this. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with the fact that it's gone this way, because I think this is suits our manager and suits what we're trying to achieve this season.
They're a week away from their season and 10 days away from their Champions League qualifying round or game or fixture. And they were ready. They're essentially in peak fitness. They're ready to go. They've been training to get to the position where they're ready to start the Premiership in Scotland. And they were going to use this not just as a warm up, just as a demonstration of where they're at. And I thought they were pretty good. Like that first half where we had the first 10 minutes and they probably had 20 minutes in the first half. And we sort of closed a bit better in the first half, but they were more than up for it, and they caused major problems at times. But it did feel inevitable, even when we went down to 1-0 out.
Yeah, I thought I agree with what John said. Really, I think you know, they're a couple of weeks ahead of us, full house, you know, top four Premier League team, you know, coming to town. you know, Rangers and Celtic survive on that European football in terms of their excitement, their interest. You know, they don't give a fuck about beating everyone else that they do every week. So it was a really good test. And I thought, like I said, first 10 minutes was good. I think it was probably slightly longer than 20 minutes where they were had us pinned back. But we were trying to invite them on to do what we do. And they marked, I think it was Lundstrom that was kind of just not giving Kane anything whatsoever, like just literally following him around the place, kind of Ander Herrera, Eden Hazard type vibes, and just couldn't get out and couldn't keep possession. And that's what we need to get out of our system and get back into the habit of having to make sure that you earn the ball first. And that's, we really did have to do that. We had to earn the right to have possession of that football for a long period of time. And then Harry Kane does that. You know, I wish I was able to record all the different noises I've made when he scored those types of goals, right?
Give us the noise you made on Saturday when you saw it.
I went, oh!
Give us another one, just a random one that you might have done.
Well, I'll tell you now, there's in the back catalogue of Fighting Cock podcast, there was a podcast we did with Amanda Jacks from the Football Supporters Federation just after Harry Kane had scored on his debut for England after coming on. For what felt like milliseconds, and I remember the ball going over the top to the back post for his head and going, "Yes, yes, hey, hey!" Like, I pitched, yes! And it was just, honestly, I'd love to make it. I remember when he scored one against Stoke when we were on the back foot for the first 20 minutes, and then he just curled one in the bottom and I went, "Fucking have that, Oak Furniture Land." just numerous noises, but it was great. And it was, that goal was almost like I knew what was about to happen.
Yeah.
As soon as he kind of got it and he took a couple of touches with his right just to bring the defender onto his left foot a little bit so that he could shift it onto his right and gain himself that extra, it's not even half a yard, is it? It's a third of a yard just to be able to get that space. And then the strike was just magnificent. Honestly, just unbelievable.
Unreal. Yeah, unreal. Well, I was kind of, you know, like through the years, you know, this podcast has grown with Harry Kane as well. Like, you know, we started in 2011, and he sort of started to come into our sort of conscious, you know, maybe 2013, where he started having a sort of seismic impact at Spurs. And we've run out of things to say about him. And I always think, well, it's kind of pointless talking about Harry Kane is. But what I actually want to do is I just want to talk about how great he is again. Like, really, let's really dig down into just how fucking good he is and how unlikely it is ever that we will see a player of his ilk, certainly a forward of his ilk, at Tottenham ever again, and probably maybe not even in the Premier League ever again. John, what tell me, just, it doesn't matter if you're repeating yourself, just tell me how good Harry Kane is.
I think basically in a lifetime, so in my lifetime, you get one player like this at your club. And we have been lucky enough to like really be in a state where we're not 95 watching this happen. Like, this is like in our peak years of enjoying Tottenham, we have a player who is this good. Now, sometimes you have like once in a generation for your club, right? But they don't necessarily, that doesn't translate like in terms of like world football. I really do think Kane is basically the best number nine in the world. Like, and I don't think that that's now with like Lewandowski kind of getting to that age and Suarez getting to that age. I don't think that's like even really a debate anymore. I think like that is an accepted fact that he is the best number nine.
He's been doing it in the Premier League, the most difficult league in the world for nearly 10 years.
And his numbers alone, right? So if you just never saw him play and just saw his numbers, it stacks up against anyone, right? They're just ridiculous numbers. But when you watch him play, the thing that I think, anyway, is most impressive about him is the fact that he's like technically, like his technique is absolutely incredible. Like the way the guy passes a ball is like a midfield general, like ball playing midfielder. The way that he finishes is like just a brute striker. His hold up play is amazing. He can play like one touch. He's like creative in like small spaces. But he has just got like all of the things from a technical point of view that you want a forward attacking player to have. He has it in spades. And it's just such a nice thing because sometimes you get strikers who are like, all pace and flair. Sometimes you get strikers who are like just goals and not a lot else. But he is that like perfect hybrid of both things. He can play the nice side of the game and play like golf shots, basically, as passes. And he can just get in the box and bury headers from 5 yards out. He's just a phenomenal talent. And I still think he's underrated across the league from other fans. They don't talk about him in the way that they should, which is insane.
They hate him.
But they hate him. But it's for whatever reason, I think it's a Spurs thing because he's associated to us that they can't stand it.
Thierry Henry and Alan Shearer and other players of his ilk got like widespread adulation about how good he is. And yet Harry Kane gets none of that. And I don't subscribe to the idea that there is a press agenda against Tottenham. I think it's ridiculous. It's a stupid, childish thing to suggest, right? There is no agenda against Tottenham. Every club feels like there is an agenda against him. But he doesn't get a fair crack of the whip, in my opinion. But then I've also heard other fans saying that there is a huge media bias for him. Alex, what do you think?
I think, as ever, the truth is probably somewhere in the middle. But what he does, which makes it, I think, difficult, particularly for a newer generation of football fans to really appreciate, is he does all the basics, all the things you're taught and you're coached as a striker, finishing across the goalkeeper, heading the ball downwards, you know, from close range, from keeping your body over the ball and long distance shots and stuff. Because he's not doing the types of goals that Thierry Henry did, where he would blitz past someone for pace, or, you know, that goal against United where he flicks it up, turns and hits it on a volley, or, you know, a Suarez type of mazy type run. What he does is he executes all of the essential parts of what you are coached to the nth degree. And what that means is people struggle because they're not seeing anything different. They're seeing him do exactly probably what they were coached on a, you know, as 11, 12 year old, 13, 14 year old, when you're trying to finish, when you're learning to get shots on target and how to use your body to make yourself space. Like, well, I've seen that before. But because he executes it to such a ridiculous level, he doesn't get that type of ooh and ah type of effect that you get with a Suarez and Henry. And with Shearer, it was different because in that generation, the value was put on that type of stuff that Shearer did. It wasn't put, you know, Cantona obviously had his moments and that type of stuff, but the value of a striker was of the type of thing that Shearer did at that time. You know, Sheringham, we always used to say Sheringham felt underrated because he would score different types of goals and would kind of tick along and keep and do what he did. But that's why I think Harry Kane doesn't get the necessary recognition that I think he does get it for most of it, but it goes in ups and downs, doesn't it? You know, I've been guilty of it before. This time last year when he wanted to go, you know, I was purposely saying, well, does he turn up in finals? And, you know, do I have a real love of him like I do with Bale and those types of people? But I think what I have done now, and I reflect on that now, and I hold my hands up, that I think some of it was probably a defense mechanism. But also, I think what I have had to realize now is that you have to appreciate what you've got while he's here. Not just whether he's at Tottenham and goes to another club to retire somewhere or whatever, but just appreciate what you've got. And I've looked at players in the past and we've seen them move on, and I haven't always appreciated just how good they were. Luka Modric is a perfect example, you know, of really appreciating actually how much of a wonderful player he was. Bale, it was easy to appreciate because it was blockbuster. It was every goal was just ridiculous. But with Kane, it's almost like, you know, that goal on Saturday is just, oof. If Kulusevski had scored that or Richarlison had scored that, we'd be going, fuck me. Yeah. But because he's Harry Kane, he's doing it every other week.
Of course.
You know, that's what it is.
There was a lot of Kane's game that was not different because we'd seen it before. But it seemed so deliberate that he was dropping. So he was playing central to Son and Kulusevski, but he was dropping deep into midfield to receive the ball and turn and play it into Kulusevski more regularly than Son. But and Richarlison was doing the same thing against Sevilla, where he was asked, or it might have been the Korean, I can't remember, but he was asked to drop and spin and find his man or draw the foul. And like I say, I know it's not a new tactic, but there is something deliberate about that. Do you worry about Kane's ankles if he's being asked to play that role, because you know we know how weak they can be, or they have proved to be when he rolls them. If he's getting the ball and there is, you know, whenever anyone plays against Spurs, their central defensive midfielder is going to have to have a worldie to stop this kind of play. And part of the reason why we signed Bissouma was because how good he was at Brighton last year when he stops us from playing that way. But their central defensive midfielder is going to have to deal with a player of Kane's quality and Richarlison's quality to pick the ball up in midfield and stop them from turning. And the only way I can see them can do it consistently is by fouling. If you've got any concerns, John, about Kane's ankles or even Richarlison's sort of ankles when they're having to deal with that sort of central defensive midfielder who's snapping at their ankles to get the ball, because it's the only thing they can do.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, first of all, you can never legislate for injuries, and you certainly shouldn't change your game plan based around potential for injury for someone based on your game plan, right? Like, saying, oh, we're going to play ball into feet, or we shouldn't do that because someone could go through the back of them. It's like, fundamentally, you'd have to change every tactic in football if you're always planning for injuries, even if you have an injury-prone player.
Yeah.
Second thing is, Kane's ankle injuries have never come from, like, someone just smashing him, like, very rarely, right? There's one where he tried to foul someone and fucked his own ankle up. Other times, it's like jumping and landing awkwardly. Like, they're always kind of innocuous injuries, and so therefore, I don't think it's something that you can legislate for. I think, like, he's just got a weakness. It will happen. And if it does happen, at least now we have a bit more of a squad that's able to cope with it, where we didn't have that before. So the way that, I mean, like you said, having Richarlison do the same thing and, like, play that way is kind of encouraging to me, which is that if Kane's missing or we want to rest him, which is, again, a thing that we need to do a bit more often, we are actually designing a way to play, and we're not just, let's put everything through Kane and hope for the best.
Speaking of new signings, what did you make of the six of them who came on in the second half? Who is your favourite, Alex? Not necessarily in how they played, but who was you most excited to see?
I was most excited to see Bissouma. But what made you excited about him? I just because of how good he is at what he does, but I'm still not 1,000% sure about what he's going to be asked to do exclusively. Is he just going to be a destroyer, or are we going to see some more creative elements of him,
We would best use him.
I'd like to think that he would be a bit more box to box with us, which we didn't really see on Saturday. So I'm excited to see what he does. Perisic looked off the pace, which is only to be expected, but in that final third. I think you already saw there's a difference between him and Sessegnon. There is. I know a lot of people love Sessegnon. I don't get it. I still don't quite get him. So I'm excited to see more of Perisic. Jed Spence, obviously, we didn't see for very long. But again, I think you can see. I was surprised he didn't get as forward as much as I thought he might do in that last 10 minutes. As Rangers had a lot of changes and it was all a bit discombobulated. Longley, I thought, was quite composed and all right. He looks like him and Ben Davis seem to play quite a similar way, actually, which is good because that's what they're there for. It looks like we're not going to have Ben Davis on the first day of the season. So that was that. And then Richarlison, he had a couple of moments where he nearly did get away from that last defender. And if Lucas's final ball had been better a couple of times, I think we would have been away. I think we need him to get a goal as soon as possible, just to get that out of the way. And get that done. It's a shame he's missing the first game of the season. But there's no one in there where you're like, okay, do we really need this guy? I think everyone, it's quite evident, even from that showing on Saturday, that there are people to add to the squad a lot.
Well, that's it. The obviously the questions around from fans of other clubs is why did we buy Richarlison? We don't need him. He doesn't go straight into our first team. There are three other clubs in the Premier League who buy players who add depth to their squad, even if they cost significant amounts of money. And they are the three most successful teams in English football in the last 10 years, being Chelsea, Liverpool and Manchester City. No one would have batted an eyelid if either of those had signed a player that doesn't walk into their first 11 for 50 £60 million. They wouldn't.
I've done it forever and a day.
Exactly. That's what that's what people expect from a team that operates at the very top level of English football. So now suddenly Spurs are behaving like a team in the transfer market, who's behaving like a team that is a top level of English football. And it's being used as a stick to beat us with. Now, we have to worry about that because we know what's happening here. We've changed our transfer policy. We've bought in Perisic as a ready-made left wing back / forward who will offer us a solution to that left wing back issue. If Sessegnon isn't working or if he's injured, we know Perisic is going to be there from the start to do what he needs to do. Buying Richarlison for that money is the same thing. So, and buying Bissouma as depth, not just depth as a starter, but you know, Højbjerg then becomes depth, Skip becomes depth. So, I don't know what you make of the transfer window, John. And I appreciate you're going to say something positive because this Spurs podcast more Spurs, but it has been significant. And just before you answer that, well, I did a show with doing some content for a company on Mondays, and what we were doing today was rating the transfer window of various teams, and I was with a Man City supporter and a Liverpool supporter, and unanimously together we agreed that Tottenham had won the window or were winning the window. So yeah, I wonder what you make of it, John.
Yeah, I think I mean, obviously I am going to be positive because I'm generally positive about Spurs anyway, but I do think, like, you can look at this window objectively if you were a neutral, and you can make cases for why none of these transfers are bad, like, because you can never guarantee that a transfer is going to be good, but you can kind of like legislate that these are like solid like investments, or they make sense for the short term. And like for me, like Perisic is just a very experienced player when we have basically inexperienced players in that squad position. So like, to Al's point, right, Sessegnon, I'm kind of in the middle with him. Like, I don't love him, I don't hate him. I think he's obviously got something. Having someone like Perisic is going to make him better. Like, I can't see a world in which he doesn't learn something.
Perisic has helped him in the attacking third, didn't he?
Exactly. So I think like that to me makes a lot of sense. I'm not going to go through all the transfers like one by one, but essentially like they've all either improved what we've got in the first team and therefore like puts previous starters on the bench, which got us into like the top four. So they are good players. So it's improved our squad. The other thing for me is like, I think we've gone from one extreme to the other, basically, which is why people are finding it like uncomfortable to deal with our windows. We had two windows where we didn't sign anyone. We've had like a decade of basically purchasing either players from the Championship, like in Walker and players like that, and Norton, and some work out, some don't. We've tried buying French players that no one's ever heard of and seeing if they work out, because, you know, occasionally someone will pluck like a player from France and they work out well. So we try to do it and it hasn't really worked out. We buy Dutch centre forwards because they're doing okay in the Eredivisie and that doesn't work out. It's like we've tried all these different approaches that sometimes pay off for other clubs. The thing that we've not done before is what we're doing now, which is going, we don't need him, but we want to build a squad. And now when we're getting linked with like James Maddison and other creative players, I've heard other people going, oh, it could be 50, 60 million. Like, do we really want to spend that on a creative player? Yeah, why not? Yes, just get them in. It doesn't matter if he plays 5 games a season. It's not my money. It's the club. It's our club that we all put in money in one way or another. I want to see the best possible squad we can assemble. I don't give a fuck if they spend another 500 million on players that never play. Just give us the options to get better players in the squad. And I just think it's a mentality shift. We all just keep looking at where they're going to play. They're not going to play. They're going to be on the bench, and we might need to bring them on in the Champions League game.
Play. There will be games where they play. There was a geezer on Twitter, and I can't remember his handle, but he said that we haven't significantly improved our first 11. Is that fair, Alex? The first 11 thing's a myth. You need a squad.
Yeah, look, at the start of every year, everyone talks about, well, you know, you can't go another season. They can't keep relying on Harry Kane, right? So we've gone out and you can't go out and buy. I think we've proved it. We're the model for every other club who have got one of those strikers, which not many have. But you can't just go out and buy, really, whoever it might be, who is that good, that it's just going to sit on the bench. It doesn't happen.
So the case in point here, Alex, would be Lewandowski at Bayern Munich. They never replaced him. They never found another. They didn't try and sign Harry. They weren't talking about Harry Kane when Lewandowski was at their side, because you can't sign a player to compete with Harry Kane or Lewandowski. You can't. Yeah. And so it's not surprising now that Nagelsmann's spewing all this bollocks about Harry Kane would do very well in the Bundesliga. He'd eat the Bundesliga. He would eat it. He would absolutely just destroy it. You wouldn't even have to fucking manage your team. He'd be that good for you. So you're not saying anything there. But yeah, sorry, I'll cut you. Just something that's been boiling in my brain for it.
Yeah, I do think that's a bit, yeah, I think there's been a little bit of overreaction to that. Nagelsmann was asked a very leading question and very, very leading follow-up question, to be fair. He answered the question fairly straight back about Harry Kane.
You love Nagelsmann, all right, it's fine, mate, it's fine.
But anyway, so we've gone out and signed someone like Richarlison, who can play up there, who is in the Premier League, who has scored goals in the Premier League. You know, I've said on this podcast, I'm not massively convinced about Richarlison in general, but he is the type of signing that I never thought that this club would make whilst Harry Kane is still there. And that's what they've done. In terms of improving the starting 11, I think Perisic will start, and I think Bissouma will start. So I think both of those
are definite improvements.
Yeah. And so there's nothing about us. And like John said, this is the first 11 that got us top four. So it's about trying to make sure that you don't, by having a tiny little hiccup of someone being injured, Ben Davis being injured at the minute is a perfect example, but someone can come in that is relatively ready-made. Would we rather have Clement Longley come in, or would we rather have Joe Roven come in? I'd rather have Clement Longley come in.
Yeah. So you're on that left-hand side, yeah.
Yeah, but I just mean in general, just in terms of those things. And I don't think we're done yet. I think we will see another attacking midfielder. And I do think if the right centre-back does become available, I think we probably might even see another one of those as well.
It does. It does feel like that in order to complete this window, a Bastoni and Dicker.
I feel an attacking midfield. I wouldn't be too upset if we didn't sign another defender. But I do feel that. I think I said for this window to go right. Okay, let's go. I said last week that we need another right wing back because we were all debating about whether this Jed Spence thing would actually happen. But the other week, I was like, look, if we don't get another right wing back, I think we are making it very, very hard for ourselves.
Well, technically, we've got three right wing backs, four right wing backs, because Moura's been playing there, hasn't he? What do you make of that? He's, apparently,
he got a lot of stick. He got a lot of stick, didn't he, from Lucas Moura? But I thought he did all right. For terms of second game, playing at right wing back, I'm not massively against it. I think
Spurs are apparently about to activate a clause that we have in his contract.
Good, so we should
for another year.
Yeah, good. So we should.
No harm can come from that.
Yeah, he's a squad player that Conte trusts, who does
loves,
get goals.
Apparently, not just trust, loves. Not that it's not. I don't think it's about his quality necessarily, but it's about his attitude and willingness to just do what he's asked to. And I know there is this, there's a lot of criticism and a lot of stuff that's thrown at Lucas Moura, and he might not be good enough, or he might, I mean, although he's fucking scored some massive goals. I'm not even just talking about Ajax, some massive goals for Spurs away from home against very, very good teams, Manchester United, Man City, Barcelona at Nou Camp. And to have him around, who's he's well liked and even loved, if you believe what the ITKs are saying, then there's nothing wrong with having him there. He's not going to break the bank.
And the difference is, and without going all Alex from Bristol, but he is the perfect player that you can't judge on stats and numbers and that type of stuff. Like, all right, you can judge him as an overall player in the wider football community, sure. But what he can bring in a 10-minute spell, a 20-minute spell, in stuff that you can't necessarily always measure, that's there is a difference. There is a grey area of those elements, and he is king of that grey area. And the nature of grey areas is that sometimes it's shit and sometimes it's brilliant. And that's just the nature of the beast. But getting rid of Lucas Moura and saying not replacing him now would just be daft. It's ridiculous. Yeah. He's not costing us anything. We're not going to make a significant amount of money less now than if he went on a free transfer. I mean, what would someone buy him for? 15 mil, maybe? Well, it's not going to be much more than that, is it?
We've had so many players that have done less than Lucas Moura for us who leave because their eyes are lit up by other opportunities. And he's done so much, and he's willing to stay. And he's talked about going back to play in Brazil after Spurs. Like, there's no other club for him. Like, he's
He will score. He'll score six or seven. He'll score six, seven, eight goals this year in all competitions. Which those six or seven or eight goals, if you're going to bring someone else in who is remarkably better, okay. But for the sake of what the situation he's in, I don't think there's too much of an issue. But so in terms of the starting 11, just to get back to your question, have we massively improved it? Have we really, really pushed on? I think we've improved it by 15-20%. Which I think is good. And then we didn't, the whole issue with our starting 11, and we've had this back in 2016, the whole year, you know, unbeaten at home and stuff. The issue was, who do you bring in that improves that starting 11 right now? Because again, you looked at the numbers, unbeaten at home in a year, you know, calendar year, most points, all that type of stuff. There is a balancing act to it. But what? Like I said, yeah.
I think we're unbeaten at home in a year.
We were unbeaten at home, weren't we? 2016?
Oh, right. Sorry, I thought you meant this year. Sorry.
No. But you see what I mean? In the past, we've had those periods of time,
right,
you know,
right.
Walker, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Rose, Dembele. You know, it was difficult to go, right, well, who do you bring in? So I'd like to see one more attacking midfield. I think we will. I think we'll see a big dog signing, not necessarily in name, but in terms of money spent. I think we'll see another 40, 50, 60 mil attacking midfielder, and I think that'll probably be it.
We'll need to see. We need Lo Celso and Ndombele off our wages if that's going to happen, in my opinion. But before we go on to your expectations for the season, can I just say what a good looking pair of blokes you are?
Fucking thanks. Cheers, mate.
You're, honestly, you are. Yeah, I'm looking at both of you and going, God, I'd like to look like him.
To be fair, you've lost a fair chunk of change yourself, mate. You're looking as dashing as I've seen you for a long time.
Thank you, mate.
Well he's always dashing in the face. I mean, stand up and give it like lift your shirt up.
Fuck that. I'm working hard in the gym. I'm not ready. Like creating the dark and then showing the light. You know what I'm talking about. So let's have your expectations for the season. What can we do? Like if you look at the odds of an arbitrary bookmaker. Man City are 13-18 to win the league. Liverpool are 16-5. Spurs are third with 15-1. Chelsea 18-1. Man United are 39-1. And Arsenal, despite spending £228 million, they've spent £228 million more than they've recouped. So they've speculated £228 million in 2 years. And they are currently 40-1. Just quickly, before we go into your expectations of what Spurs can do this year. So Arsenal fans are in this fucking bubble that I don't quite understand. They've got everything they dreamed of in spending the kind of money that Chelsea and Manchester City spent when there were no regulations. Huge amounts of speculation. They can't continue this forever. And Callum made a great point in WhatsApp earlier is, the problem with Arsenal fans is that the speculation doesn't match the expectation of the Arsenal fans. They seem to be happy with finishing fifth. They would say top four would be fine. But regardless of Champions League football next year, even if they get it, they can't continue to spend 100 million plus without recouping any money. Even Man City this year have made nearly £80 million in transfers. Chelsea are not speculating in the same way that Arsenal are. I just wonder what they're thinking and how hard, and it may work out for them and things go well and Jesus is the Harry Kane that they've been looking for. I mean, that is not going to happen, but maybe that's what they're thinking. But what, like I'm pretty sure that there is going to be hard times for Arsenal if they do not make a title challenge. I mean, they have to after spending that kind of money. It's madness, isn't it? Alex? John?
Go on, John. You go. I talked a lot. Go.
Yeah. I mean, look. I think fundamentally, if it wasn't them, I might give a different answer to this. But fundamentally, they're starting from a pretty shit place, so they need to spend money. The problem that they've got is they didn't hit their objective, which was to finish fourth. Which means you can attract a much better caliber of player. So you can spend. There's a bracket, and Spurs have been there as well. There's a bracket of player you can get when you're not in the Champions League. You still have to spend quite a bit of money on them because you've got other clubs who also have a reasonable stature who are also bidding for those players because they're the best of the next bunch that could get you up into the next bucket. So you kind of got to spend it. And so they are stuck in this, well, we've got a young team that needs improving. Well, we're going to have to spend, and we've got to spend it on these players. So they're going to have to spend a lot of money. But as we've just said, that's not a guarantee, right? That's not like throwing just mega money at some of the world's best players to try and get you over the line in the league or to try and win the Champions League like City and Liverpool can do. They're just not in that space. And they're not even in the space we're in because we're in the Champions League and we can fish for players that we want to get. And so it is, and every season this is true, which is why it was so crucial that we finished above them. It gets harder and harder. And I
didn't realize how crucial it was. Like in the run up, it was just about bragging rights for me. But as it's transpired, it was so much more than that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's mega. And so, like, to go into your kind of original question on like what's the expectation for the season. I kind of think like actually we do need to, and this kind of sounds a little bit mad, but like we do need to kick on. And what I think basically that looks like for me is like the likes of Chelsea and United, I think they're a bit all over the place in transition. I said the other day that like City, yeah, their squad's amazing, right? Like obviously they've got a great manager and all the rest of it. However, like they have changed and lost a few players that have been like kind of core to their team by their choice, fair enough. But they have like Sterling's of this world, I think was, I don't know why they let him go. Like, I cannot get mad around that at all. But he's gone. And they're bringing in like a striker who is not, they've been playing with a false nine for like 2-3 seasons. They've now got a fucking massive, big striker. Granted, he's amazing. But that is different. Like, they're going to have to change, they tweak the way they play. That might take a little while. Might mean they have a little bit of a bad start or, you know, it might be more difficult for them to get up to the City that we've known for the last couple of years. Liverpool have got lost Mane and they've signed a striker that's done it at Benfica or wherever the fuck he was. Like, who knows if he's going to hit the ground running. So there are question marks for the first time in that sort of like 3 or 4 year cycle with those top two teams. And so I feel like we have got a bit of consistency. We have got a brilliant coach. We've got the best striker. We've got the best duo in Kane and Son. We've got one of the best defenders, one of the best goalkeepers. We've bought Basuma, who, okay, granted, he's not played for a top six club, but he has been one of the most promising midfielders. And suddenly you put him round all of those players. Suddenly it's like he could really not. Like,
there were Man United fans going, like, they need a defensive midfielder. Why didn't we go and get him?
Yeah. I actually still can't believe we've got him because I don't understand why so many other clubs didn't go for him. But anyway, we have. So I'm looking at it just thinking, we have to basically close that gap on first. Like we can push that all the way and see where it takes us. And then go as far as we can in a cup competition. That's what I think will happen. But what I'm going to, like, nail my colours to the mast and say we're going to win the league. There you go.
You think we're going to win the league?
Yeah, yeah. Why not? I think this is it. For all the reasons I've given, we're going to win the league.
I mean, you said, why not? I mean, there are reasons why not.
There's loads of reasons why not. There's more reasons why not than there is why.
Ignore them. Ignore them.
Why not? Okay.
Exactly.
I'm with you. Fuck it. We're gonna.
If you need, and if you look, this season is massive for Tottenham Hotspur. John's right. There has to be some progression. Scraping fourth on the last day of the season. I'm not trying to sound like an Arsenal fan, but when I say it's not good enough, but what I'm saying is it's not good enough in terms of. If we want to really start making that progression now, you know, qualifying for the Champions League is the minimum now. You know, I'm not saying that in terms of this is what we deserve because we've spent this and we're loyal fans and all this bollocks. I'm saying that in terms of if you want to go and cement this now, and the likelihood of us finishing in the top four does mean keeping Arsenal out of that top four, because I think Chelsea will be all right. They'll get there. I don't think, you know, I had them tipped for the title this last year. You never quite know what you're going to get from Chelsea from year to year.
In terms of transfers, they've got a lot to do.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's a lot in there. But what John said about consistency, it's funny enough, I was having this conversation with my boss today, who's a Liverpool fan, and he was expressing the same type of concerns that John was, and talking about City is that, you know, the likelihood is that they'll be fine. And let's say Man City win the league. But I genuinely do think that, you know, if Liverpool do have a bit of a stutter, Chelsea start late, you know, United's still got a lot of work to do, and it doesn't quite work for Arsenal, which is more than quite likely. Although I do think Zinchenko is a fantastic signing, I will say that. The gate is open for us, and so we have to step through it. And so this is the year when you want to watch every single game you can. So get NordVPN for your 3 PM kick.
That's nordvpn.com/thefightingcock. Great offer. first month, 2 months free. Apparently. We've got some questions then, in terms of, well, we've done sort of the expectations. I'm agreeing with you. I'm somewhere between winning the league and just pushing Liverpool and Man City. And we spoke about it on the podcast before, but I mean, we beat Man City twice last year. We should have beaten Liverpool twice last year. We win all the easy games, all the other ones.
But you can see it in your face right now, Flav, right? We're all having the same thing internally, really, deep down. Dreaming, we're going, oh, but everything's the last 6 weeks of the last season was pretty good, right? This preseason's been great because we're signing people like Fark, going to preseason games, winning. We've got Antonio Conte. Everything's brilliant. What's happening? What's going to happen next? Let's be honest with ourselves. What's going to go kablamo?
Exactly. So as Spurs fans, we, as happy as we all are, we're acutely aware that this. I mean, it's not something I've been like obsessing over, but it has something just sort of got. You know, like you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning after you've done something 6 years ago that was embarrassing, and you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go, remember when you did that at that party? And like, I thought I'd forgotten about that. It's the same thing with this. It's like everything's going brilliantly, but do you remember we're Tottenham, right? It's that little thing, and it's that I want to get rid of. And that's what's so frustrating about Arsenal fans being so blindly optimistic about what's going on.
We have to let go of those things, but
they should be waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning going, do you remember when we were 4 points clear and Spurs still fucked us in the arse? Do you remember that? That's what they should be. But it's almost like that didn't happen.
No, but they're different. They're different because
one of them has arseholes. They don't have arseholes. They ingest everything and all the bile just lives in them forever.
their missus has broken up with them, right? She's moved on. You know, she's got, you know, a really nice, successful, very handsome guy. But because, you know, he might wear chinos and not Stone Island, they're like, well, you know, I'm better than him, really. She'll come round. They're going around and picking up the kids every weekend, you know, dressed up to the nines, thinking that she's going to open the door and go, fucking hell, what did I give up? Come on in. You know, do you want a Stella? That's not going to happen. She's drinking red wine now. She's drinking red wine, Flav.
She knocks at the door. She knocks at the door and you open it. An Arsenal fan opens it, right? Opens it, doesn't look at her, walks away. Bearing in mind she's a 10 and he's a 6. He turns round, he walks down this grotty little hallway that he lives in, turns into the living room, and there are 17 empty packets of Watsits that he's polished since lunchtime. That's Arsenal. Just dust. Just Watsit dust everywhere.
Watsits are too elite for them. Frazzles.
No, Frazzles are all right. What would you say? What is an Arsenal-level crisp?
You know, chipsticks. Those Transformers.
Fuck off. Chipsticks are goat. I'm not having that.
Transformers. Are you saying Transformers, John?
Or Frazzles are horrific. They're awful.
Yeah, okay. Frazzles are disgusting. Yeah.
Let's move
Frazzles
on to some,
are disgusting, yeah.
some questions from the people. One of these questions is from our very closest of people, Felonious Filth. He says, which player will be the one who introduces Andrew Tate to the dressing room? As Dyer has done with Portnoy. Portnoy is the pizza geezer, isn't he? Skip turns up and goes, you've seen what this geezer's saying about women. I love women. My mum's a woman, but fuck it. He's saying some good stuff.
Do we need to give context to who Andrew Tate is for those that don't know?
Because... Oh, Flav, tell everyone who he is because he hasn't fucking talked about him for about 4 months.
That makes me sound like I'm one of his people. I'm not.
You are.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
He's going to give a discount code to Hustlers University.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, so you know what it is. You know what it is.
The greatest pyramid scheme going.
Of all time.
It's unreal, isn't it? We don't have time to, but Google Andrew Tate. If you haven't had the unfortunate experience of coming across him, then Google him. But I reckon Skippy. So got some questions here that I haven't prepared for.
I'm gonna say Davison Sanchez to answer that question. Because I'll tell you why. Because I think culturally, because like coming from South America, he'll listen to some of the stuff about like non like Western Europe, you know, being the fall and decline in more traditional countries, more kind of traditional cultures, and he'll align with a lot of that stuff and be like, oh, I don't agree with everything he says, but he makes some good points around marriage and stuff like that. I think it'll be the rogue, and then he won't have seen all the other videos, and then everyone will be really shocked, and they'll have to tell him that actually he's got that completely wrong.
What did you make of the Dave Portnoy video that he done, the one? So this is a geezer who, I don't know, what does he do? He owns Barstool Sports in the US. He's got troops and expressions as making football content, but he's done other stuff. And one of these things that he's done is a pizza review, like one bite review, where you review a pizza from 0 to 10. And Eric Dyer made a comment or a reference to this guy on when they were flying out to Korea, and then it got back to him, and then they ended up in the Kane, Doherty, and Dyer ended up in this, I don't know, sort of, what do you call it, alleyway, and eating pizza and doing this thing. But do you think that was a good thing for the Spurs players to do? Like the fact that Portnoy played a troops video message or audio message to him. Do you have any issue with it, Alex?
I haven't seen it, and I've no idea who he is. So it's probably best someone else answers that.
Okay, John, have you got any answer, or should you just move on?
So I hadn't seen this guy until this week, and I've seen him 500 times, including the UFC, which I never watch, and suddenly he's there, and they're like zooming in like he's the most famous man in the world. I've literally never heard his name.
Run and jump on him.
Yeah, she was like, when she came in, she was like, wait, but he's like sponsoring her, or like Barstool, or like doing something for her. I honestly, I never saw this guy, and now he's like, he's basically Andrew Tate for this week. He's just everywhere.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on back to some Spurs stuff. Do you think Conte is going to, do you think the Conte contract extension happens? That's from Glass Ankles on Twitter. So we're in a situation where if it doesn't get renewed and he doesn't agree to do it, at the end of the season he goes. Do we worry about that? You know, Guardiola's been running on a rolling contract, but I guess the situation at Manchester City is different from what it is at Tottenham. Should we even be thinking about what Conte will do now, given the fact that he's been given everything he wanted? Like, where are you at with that situation, Al?
I don't care. I honestly don't care, because this year is too important to be thinking about all of that shit. And football changes so quickly. We know this, right? So just us as Spurs fans, like, I genuinely believe we have to, we talked about all the stuff in the past that makes us wake up at 6 a.m. thinking, oh shit, what's going to go wrong? We need to leave all that aside. We need to stop worrying about all this stuff. Does Kane sign a new contract? Everything right now is about this year. This is a unique opportunity to go and fucking do something. Go and fucking do it. Then we'll talk.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What Al just said there, I think, is kind of where I was coming from with the timing for us to do something special. And I think Conte's thinking that he can win the league. I really do think that. I think he thinks, okay, I'm going to win the league with this team. These are the players I need based on what we've got and what we need to get in through the door. If you give that to me, I'll deliver the league. If he wins the league and then goes, see you later, Spurs.
Mate,
I will love him forever and ever and ever. So it doesn't really matter. And if he doesn't do it and we bridge the gap and he goes, actually, do you know what? We're fucking close. Maybe next year, he'll sign.
Yeah.
If he thinks, if we have a complete stinker and he's like, well, this is just not working out. It's not working out. We've got a great squad and we go again. So like, yeah, to Al's point, just don't worry,
Alex,
about it.
He does. He does. He does think that he can win the league. He wouldn't be there. You know, his entire ethos is about winning. We will win the league. And the thing that we haven't taken into account, and it seems that there are many media outlets out there and fans of other clubs haven't taken into account, is we have Conte. Not only do we have all these new players that have improved our squad, what is Conte going to do with them? And what difference would that make? So we've bought these players for a certain amount of money and we've seen what they've done at other clubs. But now they're with Antonio Conte. What will they become? And what will Spurs become?
Oh. He wouldn't be here if he doesn't. John's right. He believes that he can win the league with Tottenham this season or next season. And it will depend on how close we are this season as to whether he goes again next season. If we decline, he might be in that nature where he goes, okay, maybe it's just not something for me. But he's not that type of guy. He's not someone you know, he might walk out after he's done something, but not whilst he's still trying to do something. And I think as long as we are progressing in that nature, then he'll be here next year anyway. This is why this year is so important. Just worry about progressing. That might not be winning a title. That might not be winning a cup, but it'll be about progressing and pushing and finishing better and stronger and more consistent than we were last year. And if that happens, he'll be here next year anyway. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, and the narrative around Conte when he took over was, will Daniel Levy back him? Do you remember that? No one's saying that anymore, by the way. We haven't heard that thing. We haven't had that thrown at us. No, all we're getting now is about trophies. That's all we're getting, because the things that people thought about Spurs and about our situation with Conte, that the old Spurs, the Spurs that people think that we still are, even though we're not, would have brought Conte in as a fix and hope that he stays around because there could be some sort of relationship that's developed. But fundamentally, everyone was going, yeah, you got Conte, but Daniel Levy's not going to back him. He's not going to back him, is he? Because that's not what Daniel Levy's done. We even, like, when I went on the overlap, almost four months ago, they were saying, yeah, you got Conte, but yeah, we know how Daniel Levy operates. Well, how does he operate now? Look at what we've done in the transfer window, winning it, according to fans of Liverpool and according to fans of Man City. How are we operating now? We're backing him. We're giving him everything he wanted. So that conversation can't exist anymore. So what will happen if that narrative doesn't exist? All it is, and this is where the fan bases of other clubs are worried, is that Conte's got what he wants. And when he's got what he wants, as we've seen in previous clubs, he delivers. Now, I'm not saying that we are going to win trophies this year. I fucking praise God that we do. But right now, all we know is what we know. And that is a transfer window that has been quality. A manager that is world level, that there are very few clubs in European football that wouldn't swap their manager with ours right now. And he's been given the tools to do what he wants to do. So let's just, in this moment, it's 2 weeks before the season starts, let's just fucking enjoy that. It's like, what a wonderful position to be in. And a year ago, we had Nuno Espirito Santo, came wanting to leave, no direction, and now we're here.
Yay!
Jeez. Most of the time, we're dreamers as Spurs fans anyway, dreaming about what could be and how it could be. And most of the time, it's pretty unfounded, let's be honest, right? But we're optimistic. This is, along with the peak Poch years, this is a season where you can go into it really dreaming about the big prizes. Like, I do genuinely believe that. Like I said before, best striker, one of the best managers, so many good players. It's open. So, like, let's just dream. Let's just dream. Why not? That's what the fucking game's about. Otherwise, what's the point? Pack up and go home. Exactly.
Don't do the lyrics. It was all a dream.
Just to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hang a picture. I'm not going to do the whole thing. I know the whole thing.
Alex,
who's that? UB40.
you got a wolf tattooed on your arm.
Yeah.
A bit Andrew Tate, that, isn't it?
It's
a pretty sweet tattoo, to be fair.
Yeah, it looks sick. The eyes look amazing.
Yeah, well, is that new?
No.
A bit old for that, though, isn't it? A bit old for tattoos. So,
yeah. But when
can you turn it to the camera? You're showing the guns up. So people that listen to this on your general podcast feeds, you won't be able to see Alex flexing with his tattoo. Oh, look at their biceps. Jesus.
Those pythons.
It doesn't shock me that Alex has been absolutely up to his neck in guts. That is not.
I want it on record that is not true. Oh, for the last year.
Yeah.
Calendar year. Yeah, I'm a bit like Spurs. Calendar year, I've got all the prizes, but recently, you know, I've been a bit more, you know, sensible and reserved and focused, shall we say?
That's good for you. Good for you. Remember, boys, The Fighting Cock is sponsored by nordvpn.com/thefightingcock. Get your order in right now. And not least, do you get all of the adult content that you want from various parts of the world. And football, 3pm football, you can get from the various broadcasters around the world that show the football. but you also support the Fighting Cock. And that's a wonderful thing if you choose to do it. So, yeah, this has been episode 1, season 12 of the Fighting Cock podcast. Thank you so much, John and Alex. I want to see you both in person very soon.
We will. We will all see each other very soon.
Naked?
Preferably.
We are staying in the same hotel room.
Yeah. I'm technically never naked, as discussed on the last pod I was on.
I didn't realise how hairy you was, actually, until you posted a picture of your torso the other day. No, it was a video of your torso. And the amount of hair under your nipples is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's incredible. Do you know what the best...
You get hairier the further down your body you get.
Yeah, the best description anyone ever gave to me said that they said, Bash, your body is like a wetsuit, because I don't have any hair on my hands or on my feet. But everywhere else is covered, right? It's just like,
I love it.
Literally neck down, everything is hair, so that's the suit. And then,
have you ever shaved the hair on your chest?
Once. It grew back really bad. So that's probably why it's so hairy. Yeah,
you
completely
need a fucking chainsaw.
Yeah. To be honest, as discussed.
All right, now,
no, yeah, I'm not sorry. Was that is that an attack? It didn't mean that. It's just, look, women, I've said this, that women and men in the gay scene, and I'm sure non-binary as well, would love a man who looks like a bear or looks like a...
I've been told, you know, like I've been single for a while now, and I've any time the conversation has come up about chest hair, it's almost non-existent of where someone's gone, you know, I'm glad that you shave your chest from time to time.
Yeah, I'm glad you've got the chest hair of a 8-year-old boy. No woman has ever said that.
No, I think even
I like getting rid of mine because it follows. John's is fine because it's like it's just there. It's like someone's gone, oh, there's a nice rug, I'll shave that and sell it, tape it to his chest. Like, it's just there. Mine has like a pattern, like it goes up and around, like it starts at the bottom of like my pecs, and then it follows like a little path. So it looks like someone's put a scalextric path like around my nipples and stuff. And it makes me look almost like, I don't know, it makes my chest, even though it's got chest hair on it, it makes it look very feminine because it looks like I've combed it to like a middle parting.
I think people should think about chest hair like a beard. If you've got like just little wispy bits that doesn't grow into like a nice like pattern, if that's how it is with your chest hair, then get rid of it. In the same way as like don't grow a beard because it will just look weird with the patches.
If it connects.
Yeah. If it connects, then fine. If you like how, if you've got like a weird pattern of chest hair and you think it's better without it, then be better without. Fundamentally, you just got to be comfortable in your own skin or hair.
And if you've got receding hairline or anything like that, shave it off. I'm sick of all this. Like, oh, let's look after bold people. Fucking get on with it. I had to get on with it. You get on with it. Fucking fanning about. Get rid of it.
Stop going to Turkey, for fuck's sake, for your teeth and for your fucking hairline. Just accept it. You've got shit teeth and you've got no hair.
Yeah,
the only person that cares about you not having hair is you. So get on with it. Indeed. Sick of it. That's the only Andrew Tateness that I'll do, you fucking pussy.
When I did see that picture of John Bass, or video, sorry, of John Bass's hair, I wanted to curl up in it like a little squirrel and like, you know, just hunker down. But like, your missus is so lucky to get into your chest hair.
Mate, in my single days, there were girls that, like, if I was wearing a shirt or whatever, they'd be like, that's really hairy. And then by the time you'd like charmed them around and they're like nuzzling in.
Stuck in it.
Yeah.
Stuck in it.
Like Velcro.
couldn't escape. Screaming.
Like
screaming.
Like a blue bottle in a web. Just like, it's actually all right once you're in.
Screaming. Going, let me get away from him. And you go, I'm not touching her. I'm not touching her.
Like a big fucking sweaty labyrinth. Once they're in there.
What are those toys you could buy? Those you get like that, this little disc with Velcro on, you throw a tennis ball and it sticks to the thing.
John's doing, just, body.
That's how John pulled. Like they'd just be walking past him up in the club and he'd just go ooh! with his chest and he just stuck to it, man.
Can we have a shout out to Ricky who's broken his finger? Alex, how did Ricky break his finger?
I've no idea. How did he break
his finger? John, how did Ricky break his finger?
So you know back in the day when people used to say there's that myth about if you take a rib out of your rib cage, you can suck yourself off.
Yes.
Well, he was trying to basically like tuck his rib cage in with his finger to suck himself off and then bent the end of it and broke it, which is a real shame.
So that's a lie. But the fact is, the truth is even more tragic than that. His 9-year-old daughter threw a ball at him. He tried to catch it and broke his finger. His 9-year-old daughter had so much power in her throat that Ricky's finger couldn't cope with it. Oh, unbelievable. Little... And that's, he was supposed to be on the podcast tonight, but he went to A&E because he still broke his finger.
Perfect. As everyone knows, once you break a finger, you can't possibly talk. So, you know, it makes sense.
Indeed, indeed. He'll have to answer for this in the coming episodes of The Fighting Cock. But thanks once again for joining us over the last 12 years, well, 11 years, 12 to become. You're all legends. Thanks for downloading. As ever, John, Alex, I love you so much. And this has been The Fighting Cock Podcast.
Podcast Network. Sports Social 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 Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and Geico is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com or contact your local agent today.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network. Sports Social Podcast Network.